85 degrees in Jacksonville.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. If you are listening to this program, then you have probably, at one time or another, and more often many times in your life, had your blood pressure measured. And you may even have had an understanding of what it means to have a good blood pressure. But do you really understand why we have a blood pressure at all? And why we need to maintain that blood pressure within a healthy range? To understand, and I mean really understand, the importance of your blood pressure, we think that you need to understand why the body needs blood in the first place. So what is the purpose of blood? Sounds like a simple question. What is it?
Blood is a combination of plasma and cells that circulate through the entire body. The plasma is the clear, straw-colored liquid portion of blood that remains after the red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets, and other cellular components are removed.
It contains water, salts, enzymes, antibodies, and other proteins. It is also a specialized body fluid that supplies essential substances around the body, such as sugars, oxygen, and hormones. Not only that, the plasma also removes waste from the cells in the body and thus helps in what you might call sanitation and elimination. The blood helps transport oxygen and nutrients around the body. In order to get the blood to circulate and do its job, the body has three main types of vessels, appropriately called blood vessels. These consist of arteries, veins, and capillaries.
By definition, an artery is a blood vessel that carries blood from the heart to other parts of the body, while a vein carries blood to the heart from other parts of the body.
So in effect, we have two pumps that make up the heart. The left side of the heart has two chambers, called the left atrium and the left ventricle. In fact, the left ventricle is the largest and strongest of all the four chambers. Its job is to pump oxygen-rich blood that comes from the lungs to the rest of the body. As it does this, the blood flows through the larger arteries to smaller arteries into the capillaries, whose walls are so thin that the nutrients can pass through its walls into the organs that use these nutrients. The organs also use the oxygen, so that once the blood has gone through the organs, they come out, generally depleted of their nutrients, and oxygen are then carried through the venules, then the large veins back to the heart, entering the right atrium, which weakly pumps blood into the right ventricle, which then has the big job of pumping the oxygen-poor blood through the lungs, where the blood again picks up oxygen, delivering it to the left atrium, where it can start anew by pumping the now oxygen-rich blood into the left ventricle, where the cycle starts all over again.
So, we are back to the initial reason that we began talking about blood and blood vessels. And that was to explain why blood pressure is so important. Without a sufficient blood pressure, the blood cannot be pushed through the entire circulatory system. How long is the entire system?
Would you believe that there are 60,000 miles of blood vessels in the body of a child and roughly 100,000 miles in the body of an adult? Remember that the circumference of the Earth at the equator is approximately 25,000 miles. So in an adult, our blood vessels, if they were arranged end to end, would encircle the Earth four times. Not something to sneer about. That's 528 million feet of blood vessels. And the heart only weighs about 8 to 12 ounces. It's about the size of a fist. By the way, the average heart in a lifetime beats about 100,000 times per day. That's 3 billion beats in a lifetime.
There is a pretty fine line, or actually a range that the heart can pump through. If the pressure is too high, it can cause problems, as can low blood pressure. If the pressure is too low, then the blood cannot get rid of the waste, nor can it pump out the nutrients and oxygen into the cells that need them.
Now, you've probably heard your physician say that your blood pressure is, for example, 120 over 80. In other words, the blood pressure consists of two numbers. The higher number is called the systolic, and the lower number, that's named the diastolic. Names aren't important, but anyway, each time the heart pumps, the pressure pushes the blood down through the circulatory system. When it relaxes, the blood vessels themselves exert a pressure on the blood, such that the diastolic pressure is, or should never be, zero.
If you are able to watch a video of a cross-section of an artery, you will notice that the blood never seems to cease moving forward. Even though with each beat of the heart, the blood is given an extra push to the circulatory system.
For many years, the blood pressure norm was considered, at least in adults, to be ideally around 120 over 80. That means a systolic of 120 and a diastolic of 80. As I said, this has not been set in stone, as recently the ideal blood pressure for a prolonged life is now considered to be lower, with the diastolic best at around 70. You, of course, have most likely had a cut or even a more serious laceration and noted that there is bleeding for a period of time, after which a clot forms. That stops the bleeding and starts the healing process. Have you ever wondered why blood does not clot inside your body regularly?
When a blood vessel is damaged, such as when you cut yourself and start to bleed, a series of chemical interactions begins. First, tiny platelets that circulate in your blood, for lack of a better description, get turned on by triggers released when a blood vessel is damaged.
They begin to stick to the walls in the area and around each other. They change their shape to form a plug that fills in the broken part to stop blood from leaking out. Not only that, platelets that are in this way activated also release chemicals to attract more platelets and other cells.
Then the next step starts.
The clot thickens.
You mean the clot thickens or grows? Certain proteins in your blood, which happens to be called clotting factors, signal each other to cause a rapid chain reaction.
It ends with a dissolved substance in your blood turning into long strands of another chemical called fibrin. These strands of fibrin get tangled up with the platelets in the plug to create a net that traps even more platelets and more cells. The clot becomes much tougher and more durable.
But your body is miraculous. This blood clot eventually ceases to grow, since other proteins offset extra clotting factor proteins in such a way that the clot doesn't spread farther than it needs to.
Now that the bleeding has stopped,
your damaged tissue begins healing and your body slowly breaks the clot down.
Now the fibrin strands dissolve and your blood takes back the platelets and cells of the clot. Now here comes a proverb.
The best laid schemes of mice and men gang after glee.
In other words, the best laid plans of mice and men oft go awry. As we said in last week's show, we just love proverbs. They make the things easier to remember and sometimes lead to better understanding. What this proverb means is that no matter how carefully a project is planned, something may still go wrong with it. So back to clotting.
Unfortunately, blood clots can also form when your blood doesn't flow properly. If it pools in your blood vessels or heart, the platelets are more likely to stick together. If the heart beats irregularly, as in atrial fibrillation and deep vein thrombosis called DVT, slowly moving blood can cause clotting problems.
There are, of course, many medications that can affect the clotting process. For example, several drugs are used to stop platelets from signaling each other so they won't stick together. These include aspirin, Plavix, Presantine, Effient, Brilinta, and Ticlid. Now, there's another group of drugs, often called blood thinners, that make it hard for your body to make clotting factors. Some prevent proteins in the clot-forming process from working. These include Eliquis, which is a brand name that has been advertised quite heavily recently on the television. There's also Pradaxa, Heparin, Cerveza, Xarelto, another one that I've seen on advertisements in magazines and TV, as well as Coumadin.
And don't forget the clot-dissolving drugs such as Altase, Streptokinase, and Tenecteplase, which actually activate the protein that breaks down the fibrin strands. This in particular is often prescribed in the treatment for heart attacks and strokes.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I have been talking about blood and blood pressure, and just before the break, we were talking about some of the medications that are used for clot dissolving. But getting back to blood pressure, you now should have a better idea why we would like to keep the pressure in a specific range. After all, we don't want unacceptable clotting within the body, but we still want enough pressure to move the oxygen and nutrients throughout the body to the target organs, like the brain, muscles, and the other organs.
Apart from various lifestyle changes that you might want to perform in order to help get into that ideal range.
And we will talk about that in a few moments.
There are medications that can be taken when those lifestyle changes are not sufficient to maintain that acceptable blood pressure range.
These blood pressure medications are most often divided into classes, which include starting with the letter A, the ACE inhibitors, alpha 2 receptor agonists, and the angiotensin 2 receptor blockers. Now, don't worry if you don't understand what these mean. We're going to tell you in just a moment.
We continue with the letters B, C, D, as in beta blockers, calcium channel blockers, central agonists, and diuretics.
And finally, we end with the peripheral adrenergic inhibitors and the vasodilators. So let's look at those first ones, the ACE inhibitors. The word ACE, A-C-E, stands for angiotensin converting enzyme. First, angiotensin is a hormone that causes blood vessels to narrow. So the ACE inhibitor decreases the production of angiotensin, which in turn helps lower blood pressure.
There are so many of these products that we are going to only mention one or two in each class. Just so you get an idea, it is certainly not an all-exclusive list by no means. ACE inhibitors include Lotensin, Monopril, Sestril, Altase, and Mavic. Again, there are several more than we have not mentioned.
Next on our A list are the alpha-2 receptor agonists, such as methyldopa, which happens to be one of the oldest blood pressure medicines still in use. It works in the central nervous system to lower blood pressure. Now, it's still very useful as a first line of treatment for high blood pressure that develops during pregnancy. We next come to the group called the angiotensin II receptor blockers. Remember, angiotensin II receptor blockers. Not Dan Blocker, especially Dan Blocker from the TV show Bonanza singing Deck the Halls. We mean angio 2 receptor blockers.
So why block angiotensin 2 receptors? How does this lower blood pressure? Well, the hormone angiotensin narrows blood vessels, but to do its job, it needs a place to bind.
That's where angiotensin 2 receptor blockers come in. They prevent angiotensin from binding to receptors on the blood vessels, and that helps lower blood pressure. Now, these include Atacand, Avapro, Cozar, Benicar, Micardis, and Diovan. Now, don't try to memorize them. Just see how many you recognize from their advertising in the media. One more on the A-list are the alpha blockers that cause blood vessels to dilate, again, lowering blood pressure. These medications are also used to treat prostate enlargement in men, and these include Cardura, Minipress, and Hytrin.
Now, continuing on the next three letters, BCD, we start with beta blockers, which lower blood pressure by acting directly on the heart. These high blood pressure medications reduce heart rate and force of pumping, as well as reduce blood volume. Beta blockers include Tenormin, Coreg, Lopressor, and Toprol XL, as well as Corgard.
Did you know that calcium increases the strength and force of contractions in the heart and blood vessels? So blocking its entry into small muscle tissue reduces this effect. Calcium channel blockers lower blood pressure by relaxing blood vessels and reducing heart rate. The calcium channel blockers include Norvasc, Cardizem Procardia, and Covera HS. Now there's another group that starts with the letter C, such as the central agonists, which work in the central nervous system rather than directly on the cardiovascular system. These include Catapress and Tenex. Now, we've ended the C's, and of course, we then come to the D, which stands for diuretic. These increase urination, which reduces sodium and fluid in the body. That can help lower blood pressure because it lowers blood volume.
Mild hypertension can sometimes be treated using diuretics alone, although they are more commonly used in combination with other high blood pressure medications. Here are some diuretics you may have heard of: Bumex, Lasix, Saroxoline, and Demadex.
One of the main problems with the diuretics is one of the side effects, which is the loss of potassium, which is carried out of the body in the urine along with the sodium. Because potassium is needed for proper muscle movement, and a deficiency of this mineral can result in fatigue, weakness, leg cramps, and even problems with the heart, patients taking traditional diuretics will be advised to take their medicine with a potassium-rich food, such as orange juice or a banana, or they'll be prescribed a potassium supplement.
To counter this side effect but still get the advantages of diuretics, certain medications, diuretics to be specific, were developed that spare potassium, such as Midamor, Aldactone, and Dirimium. Finally, there are the combination diuretics, which include a potassium-sparing agent and a traditional diuretic, such as Aldactoside and Dicide.
We're coming to the seventh inning stretch here, and need to talk about peripheral adrenergic inhibitors, such as reserpine, which years ago was one of the very few medications that could be used in hypertension. It's rarely used now because of its numerous side effects and some of the drug interactions. The peripheral adrenergic inhibitors work in the brain to block signals that tell blood vessels to constrict. They're most used when other high blood pressure medicines simply fail to solve the problem. Finally, the end of the antihypertensives. We have the letter V, which stands for victory.
You mean vasodilators?
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. V for vasodilators.
These vasodilators relax artery wall muscles, and that causes blood pressure to drop. Think of the word vasodilate. Vaso stands for vessels, meaning blood vessels, and dilate means enlarge. When vessels enlarge, the pressure within the vessels decrease. These drugs are usually not used alone, like lonitin or aprazolin.
Did you say lonitin?
Yes, I did.
Isn't that minoxidil?
Yes, it sure is.
Isn't it also used for growing hair on bald areas?
You're right. It is even available as a generic medication for male pattern baldness or alopecia.
The most common prescription written today for hypertension in terms of number of prescriptions written are the ACE inhibitors, and the one specific one is lisinopril. This is followed by Norvasc, which happens to be a calcium channel blocker, and then, in third place, I guess, the generic diuretic hydrochlorothiazide, or HCTZ.
After this lengthy discussion, you may be ready to ask, what is the best high blood pressure medication?
You know, we really can't answer that directly as selecting the best high blood pressure medication depending on several things, including the general health of the patient, his or her age, ethnicity, and whether or not they have any coexisting medical issues or even drug sensitivities. For example, in a hypertensive patient with asthma, it may be inadvisable to prescribe a beta blocker, as these drugs can actually aggravate that particular respiratory condition.
Similarly, In patients prone to constipation, the use of certain calcium channel blockers might best be avoided, along with diuretics, as both these classes of drugs can inhibit proper bowel function.
An article was written and recently published that studied a 3-medication treatment for treating hypertension. The study found that it may be advisable not to start off with just 1 antihypertensive medication, but 3, each from a different class of medication. The study showed higher efficacy and no change in side effect profile. One of the side effects of these medications can lead to weight gain. For example, the older beta blockers such as Inderal and Tenormin.
So, if your patient notices a weight gain, he or she might decide not to take the medication. So no matter how successful a medication is, if it is not taken by the patient, then that medication is a failure and the physician needs to know so that the medication can be changed if necessary.
We have a bit more time in the show, so we'll try to end the show talking just a bit about some other functions of the blood that we have not mentioned yet. Remember that blood has a number of functions that are central to survival, including supplying oxygen to cells and tissues, providing essential nutrients to cells such as amino acids, fatty acids, and glucose, removing waste materials such as carbon dioxide, urea, and lactic acid, protecting the body from infection and foreign bodies through the white blood cells, transporting hormones from one part of the body to another, transmitting messages, and completing important processes such as regulating the acidity, that's the pH levels, and the body temperature, and even engorging parts of the body when needed. For example, a penile erection as a response to sexual arousal.
Another very important function of the blood is its protective action against disease. White blood cells defend the body against infections, foreign materials, and abnormal cells. Disorders and diseases of the blood can be dangerous. They can spread rapidly during the circuit of the bloodstream around the body and impair the many functions aided by blood. The most common blood disorders are anemia, where there is a shortage of red blood cells or hemoglobin in the blood. As a result, the cells do not transport oxygen effectively, and symptoms can include fatigue and pale skin.
We've already mentioned blood clots and their use and dangers in the human body. Some clots coagulate inside a blood vessel and create a blockage. They can also become dislodged and move through the heart to the lungs, leading to a pulmonary embolism.
Clots can be fatal. Then there are the blood cancers such as leukemia, myeloma, and lymphoma.
Mutated blood cells divide uncontrollably without dying at the normal point in the life cycle of a cell.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I have been talking about blood and blood pressure, and just before the break, we were talking about some of the medications that are used for clot dissolving.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.